The best way to learn a language? Immersion. Living where the language is spoken and using it every day. But if that's not in the cards this year, you can still learn a language the second best way. And that's with Babbel. Be a better you in 2024 with Babbel, the science-backed language learning app that actually works. Don't pay hundreds of dollars for private tutors or waste hours on apps that don't really help you speak the language. Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons are handcrafted by over 200 language experts and help you start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations, and their tips and tools are approachable, accessible, rooted in real-life situations, and delivered with conversation-based teaching so you're ready to practice what you've learned in the real world. Here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get up to 60% off your Babbel subscription at babbel.com/bluewire. That's 60% off at babbel.com/bluewire, spelled BABBEL.com/bluewire. Rules and restrictions apply.
We are 1 month into the season. The call-ups are still going strong. The demotions are going strong. We've got tons of players to pick up this weekend on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Welcome, everybody, to the Saturday edition of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast, brought to you by Prize Picks, the Saturday waiver wire edition. I'm Eric Altman, joined, as always, on Saturday by Ryan Boyer. Ryan, we're 1 month in. Does that seem right? It feels like we go from, it's way too early, don't even do anything, don't think about any player, don't look at any stats, it's still April, to, wait a second, it's practically May. What happened there?
Yeah, it still feels like we're in the stages of if you trusted this guy during draft season, you should still trust him. But it is a sixth of the way through the season. I mean, that's a pretty large chunk. Hopefully you're not falling too far behind in your leagues. Otherwise, you might feel panicked to cut one of those guys or trade one of those guys who's got off to a slow start. But I think generally we're still in that pocket of the season where try to exercise patience. Obviously, it kind of depends on a case-to-case basis, but that's my general thoughts on it.
Yeah, still technically April, so I think I'll agree with you. Yep. But as soon as it gets to May, go crazy. Ignore everything you've ever learned and just only look at season stats to date. And I think that's how that works. Anyway, we've got a full show today full of waiver wire pickups, and we've also got plenty of headlines to get to before that. So let's start with the big one. Jackson Holliday yesterday, he was demoted already. Only 10 games into his major league career, but they were not very good, hitting .059. A 170 OPS, a 50% strikeout rate, only 10 games, but basically couldn't have asked for a worse start. You think it makes sense to send Holliday back down already like the Orioles did?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it was so bad. We know you never know what a 20-year-old is going to do at his first chance in the majors, but this was a pretty polished hitter. I had my expectations a little lower as far as like a fantasy ceiling goes, but I thought he would hold his own right away. And maybe he'll be back soon and do just that. But I mean, he was so bad. Like, there was nothing positive to glean from this short little stint. A 50% strikeout rate is, I don't know if he's putting too much pressure on himself, but he's not this not ready. Little double negative there for you, but yeah, it was a little reset probably made sense for him. I mean, I think, and in redrafts, are you holding him in any leagues, or are you going to cut him loose?
Right, and that's the trick. And I think most people who have him, I would imagine, are going to hold, because the people who had him, we're probably a little bit higher on him than the rest of us, right? I think there was a pretty, you know, there was a widespread thought that, yeah, he's a really good prospect, but are the fantasy numbers really going to pop right away? Is he going to have the homers and steals? So if you're someone who did draft him, you probably lean towards yes. And in that case, I would not take these 10 games and dramatically adjust my opinion of Holiday, like you said. So I think if you already were high enough on him to draft him, I think that there's no reason to believe that, you know, he's gone for 3 months. We're basically not going to see Holiday at all. If you look at like Jordan Walker last year, how long was he down? Was it even a full month? Something like that.
I think yeah, around that.
Standard. Yeah. So I think if you can stomach, you know, a few weeks without Jackson Holiday, the thing is, I didn't draft him anywhere because I wasn't one of those people who really thought that the fantasy juice was going to be there right away. So if you're asking me myself, not a hypothetical person who actually drafted him, maybe I wouldn't. And that's the trick there. I think it is kind of tough because I'm not sure the fantasy pop is going to be there once he returns. I don't think it's going to take that long for him to come back. But also there is, you know, the fact that he did strike out too much in spring training too. And that was the one thing that gave me pause and stopped me from, I hope, I should go back and check, but stopped me from ranting about service time manipulation when Holiday was sent down. Because even though he had some homers in spring training, he was missing the ball. And so this exact sort of way to struggle, there was a hint that it might happen. So maybe the Orioles really did know something when they sent him down. Maybe they knew that this could happen and they were afraid of it.
And his strikeout numbers too. I mean, he was awesome basically at every stop last year, but his strikeout numbers were the highest at AAA. It wasn't like I don't have the numbers off the top of my head. I don't think it was anything obscene or anything. It was probably like 22-23% or something like that, which was high relative to what he had done at the previous levels. So, you know, a little extra time at Norfolk, probably not the worst thing for him. Orioles are going to put Jordan Westberg back at second base most days, probably. Jorge Mateo will get some time there against lefties. And I guess Ramon Urias is the biggest beneficiary initially. He's going to see a good amount of time at third base. Probably not going to affect most mixed league players, but he's and I would think he was probably a hold anyway in a single league. So I don't know that there's a ton of fantasy relevance there other than the fact that Jackson Holiday's no longer around.
Yeah, and the one too many players to go around problem is a little bit lessened in Baltimore, which will give more opportunities for Heston Kjerstad, who we'll get to in a minute when we talk about our biggest fab buys of the week. Other big news yesterday, Jesus Luzardo hitting the injured list, just elbow tightness for now. So not one of the worst words, but definitely not one of the good ones. And some tightness. He's undergoing tests, I believe. And if those tests are not the result that he wants, we're going to see a word that's much worse than tightness applied here soon. This is also a guy with some history of elbow problems. So I assume little reason for optimism, but of course also little reason to panic drop before we actually find out the rest of the news.
Yeah. And for what it's worth, and I'm not sure it's worth much of anything, he seemed optimistic that it was going to be relatively short. When he did have his last elbow issue, I think it was a flexor issue, and he said that this was definitely a different feeling that he's feeling now, and that didn't feel nearly as bad as that injury before. So maybe you can take some positives from that. But, you know, Luzardo was off to a poor start. I think between that and the injury, there's probably going to be some people that will drop him. I would certainly love to stash him, scoop him up and stash him if someone in your league does drop him. But we're going to have more clarity surely here in the next couple of days. Hopefully we'll find out what that MRI says.
Yeah, and we got the inevitable question here in the chat. Max Meyer time then? I mean, we wonder this every time a Marlins starter goes down, which kept happening right after the Marlins decided to send Meyer back down to AAA and ramp him back down again. Kind of seems like that wasn't a great move. Kind of seems like we didn't think that was a great move when it happened. I don't know. Maybe they know more than we do, but why wouldn't they unramp down Max Meyer? Why wouldn't they re-ramp him up, however the triple negatives work here. Why wouldn't we see Max Meyer, you know, as soon as we can?
Yeah, I don't know that it's going to – maybe they get to a certain point where they don't have any other options, and they're probably not that far off from that point. I guess we might see Rodri Munoz again next week. But I – especially given where they are in the standings and how the season is looking like it's going to go for the Marlins, I mean, I think they're going to prioritize their plans with Max Meyer ahead of – you know, winning baseball games today. I did see it was early on in the start, but Meyer, I think this was his first start back at AAA since he was sent down. Maybe it was his second. I can't remember. But today he had given up like three runs in the first couple innings for whatever that's worth. I think the plan was to pitch him like once a week and like three innings at a time. Is that what it was? So yeah, that's what I remember. It's going to be a difficult. What did you say? Unramping, re-ramping, yeah. Whatever you want to call it. I don't know that it's going to change his timeline, unfortunately. So whatever your plan was with Max Meyer, I don't think that's should be altered.
Yeah, unfortunately, I think that's probably the case. Braxton Garrett is, you know, restarting his rehab assignment. He was nearly back and then had a bit of dead arm, which could be the sign of a setback, but may have just been, hey, this happens in spring training sometimes.
We should note too, we mentioned last week when talking about the Marlins rotation about AJ Puck, and they officially said that he will come back as a reliever. So he's no longer a rotation.
Good option, call there. That was
I think is probably the right move.
What we all wanted, I think, after probably Puck's first start, maybe his second. I think we were all done. Yeah. The Marlins are now done with that experiment as well. In better than injury news, we've had a handful of players returning, some of them from injury, some of them just from not playing yet so far this season. Tommy Pham, he is now an active member of the White Sox. He signed a minor league contract with the team back on April 15th. I mean, it's the White Sox, the worst possible team context, but also means the most possible available at-bats. And Tommy Pham is pretty good, right? I mean, even when he isn't a great option in fantasy, it's usually because his role isn't that large. And if you prorate his numbers over a full season, he starts to look really quite good. So is this actually maybe sneaky, a really great landing spot for Tommy Pham and for fantasy players?
Yeah, I mean, I think he's definitely should be rostered in five outfielder leagues. As you mentioned, the team context is quite awful, but at the same time, he's going to be playing every day. He's going to be hitting in a good spot in the lineup. He's going to be in a good park. So it's not the worst, I guess. But yeah, Tommy Pham was still a above average hitter last year. I think he wound up with like 22 home runs and 16 steals, something like that. So that's perfectly viable as a, you know, fourth or fifth fantasy outfielder. I think he only played like three or four games in the minors. So, you know, there's probably still some rust to knock off there, but I think he should be definitely scooped up in deeper leagues.
Yeah, and I would think even in a lot of shallower leagues, if it turns out that he is going to play, I mean, watch that playing time for the first week or so. But if he's playing every day, and why wouldn't he once he's up to speed physically? I mean, he is 36, but once he's up to speed, if he's playing every day, I think even in some shallower leagues, he's going to be a totally fine last guy on your roster. Also returning, we've got JD Martinez. He's good to go with the Mets. He signed late and then I think just needed a decent amount of time to get going because he's nearing the end of his career here. Not much fantasy actionable there other than get him in your lineup. He should be fine. Framber Valdez, he is returning rather quickly from elbow inflammation. So much for everyone who's doom and gloom at every single injury. I think his may have popped up like two or three days after that horrible Strider Bieber day. And everybody was like, oh, man, here's another one. But it's nice to have a reminder that, you know, even in we're in the era where way too many pitchers are getting injured, not literally every injury is the worst case scenario. Of course, fingers crossed that Valdez makes it through his first start back on Sunday against the Rockies, which is going to be in Mexico City.
Yeah, not a great spot for him to come back to. I that's what I was going to say. I would suggest if you have the option, maybe keep him on your bench for that first start. Might be a good move.
Yeah, I think I'd be doing the same. I think if you have him in a weekly lineup league, you didn't even know that he was going to come back this Sunday, so you probably have him out of the lineup, and I think you're probably going to be happy with that if you're in a daily moves league, given that it's Mexico City, which is, again, it's way more elevation even than Coors Field. Expect the ball to fly there. I wouldn't be chancing it coming off an elbow injury. Other injury return news, Josh Lowe was supposed to be back from an oblique injury, but he's now dealing with tightness in his hamstring. He's not returning this weekend was the latest note. He was supposed to return Saturday. I guess just keep an eye there. Another injury returner, Kyle Bradish. He's supposed to be back next week. And hey, if you stash Kyle Bradish, not bad return timeline, right? Right at the start of May. He was somebody who was throwing, I believe. His injury happened very early in the spring. So if you're like me and your theory is, if he's throwing, I'm considering a stash. So far, it's looking pretty good. We'll have to see what he looks like when he comes back. But this is about as good as you could have hoped, I think.
Yeah. Earlier than I was anticipating, too, when I saw that he was probably going to be back next week. And I know his pitch count had gotten up there a little bit, but he only made 3 rehab starts. I was kind of expecting him to use the full 30-day allotment that he's allowed. But yeah, good news. I would like to probably give him a start or two just to see how he looks before activating him if I have that option. But I think you could be pretty happy if you did stash Kyle Bradish, and if he's still available, go ahead and stash him now.
Yeah, definitely. A few more minor bits of news before we move on to our waiver pickups. Garrett Cooper, he was DFA'd by the Cubs earlier in the week and was just traded to the Red Sox in exchange for cash. We've talked in the past about Tristan Casas's injury means the best option in Boston at first base was Bobby Dalbec, which was just not an option really in any fantasy leagues. Garrett Cooper, I think, clears the bar of being fine. We shouldn't get too excited. He's a type of player who was just traded for cash, but should play for at least the next few weeks in a good park. So go get Garrett Cooper.
Yeah, I think so in deeper leagues. I mean, especially a right-handed bat at Fenway. He's been a solidly above-average hitter who's had injury issues, and none of his stats really pop, but maybe Fenway will help that out a little bit. And, like you said, he's probably going to play pretty much every day. So I think he's worthy of a deep league roster spot.
Yep. Speaking of deep leagues, our final bits of news here. Wade Miley needs Tommy John surgery. So if you were stashing him for some reason, no need to do that anymore. And Cody Bradford has a stress fracture in his wrist. So I believe we'd say probably the same there, right? He was interesting early in the season, but not interesting enough to wait this one out.
Yeah, I wouldn't wait it out. One little note, Miley related. I think Robert Gasser came back to make his – I think it was his first start at AAA yesterday or day before, maybe. So he could be an option eventually and is kind of interesting. So I don't think he's necessarily a guy you need to like run out to stash right now, but I would keep tabs on him because they could need him before long.
Yeah, it looks like it was Wednesday for Gasser. Went 4 innings, 5 strikeouts, 1 walk, 1 run allowed. So he could be an option certainly in Milwaukee before too long. We will get to our biggest fab priorities of the week right after this message from Prize Picks. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across the country. Prize Picks is really simple to play. I can make my picks and submit my entry in less than 60 seconds. You pick more or less on 2 or more player stats and watch the winnings roll in. Quick withdrawals, easy gameplay, and an enormous selection of players and stat types are what makes Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Download the code today and use code ROTOPOD for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code ROTOPOD for a first deposit match up to $100. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy.
We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences, so the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Thank you to our sponsor, Prize Picks. We are back here on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast. Eric Holtzman and Ryan Boyer here, about to go over our biggest fab buys of the weekend, starting on the mound. Ryan, who is your priority pitcher number one this week?
I've got Eric Fetty of the White Sox, coming off a fantastic start, 11 strikeouts, one run, over six innings against the Twins. Start before that, he went 5 2/3 scoreless against the Royals. Currently sitting on a 2.73 ERA, 1.14 WHIP, and a 30-9 strikeout to walk rate over 26 in the third innings. This is a guy who, during his time with the Nationals, he was a former first-round pick, but he never really looked like a supreme talent at any point during his time with the Nationals. But went over to the KBO, won the Cy Young equivalent over there, put up some ridiculous numbers. Velo has been up this year with the White Sox. He's ditched his curveball, added a sweeper and a splitter. You know, he's 30, 31 years old. We've seen players go overseas and just kind of figure something out. And I think Fetty could be one of those guys. Obviously, the team context is poor. I believe even with his excellent numbers, he only has one win so far, which no surprise that the White Sox have, what, four as a team. So he does have one of them, though. If we can get more than one win a month, that would be great, but I wouldn't necessarily count on it. But certainly, at least in favorable matchups, I think Eric Fetty is a guy you want to have towards the tail end of your fantasy roster.
Yeah, I like Fetty. I think heading into the year, I was interested enough to take a chance very late because I'm willing to believe that somebody who had a real lot of success in Korea probably is pretty good. That's a lower level of competition over there, but it's not that low. They're real professional baseball players who can hit. And some of them come over here and are totally fine major leaguers. So if you are dominating KBO competition, which is a lower level than NPB, but if you're dominating over there, you're probably at least something back over here. I think he compared favorably to, say, Chris Flexen, who went over to the KBO in 2020, was dominant. Fetty was even more dominant. Flexen came back and was totally fine for a couple of years. Not a great comp now, but Fetty, I think, could totally be at least fine, and what he's shown so far, maybe even a little bit more than fine. I'm going with Keaton Wynn for my first starter here. Oh, actually, what percent would you go with Fetty? Forgot that one there. Is this a big buy or more of a 5-7?
Yeah, 5-7 sounds about right. I don't think you need to – you can probably pick him up without going overboard.
Yeah, I think that sounds right. And that's about the range I'd be in on for Keaton Wynn, who has made five starts this season with a 3.54 ERA. The ERA estimators are right on the other side of that mark, pretty much, most of them. So I'm willing to believe that he has earned a mid-threes ERA. He's got league average-ish strikeouts, just 21%, and walks, 8%. But combine that with a 59% ground ball rate, and that's usually good enough. If you're right around league average, strikeouts and walks, and you keep the ball on the ground, plenty of pitchers have made that work as at least a solid number 3-4 starter for a long time. Throw in the fact that Wynn is in a great pitcher's park in San Francisco. I'm pretty interested in what he can do the rest of the way here. I think he was just somebody who was merely an option at the back end of that rotation heading into the year. Wasn't totally sure if he was going to be trusted for, you know, traditional starter usage even. You never really know in San Francisco, but he's been used very much as a normal starter this year. 5-6, 5-6, 6 innings in his 5 outings so far. So looks like a totally normal back end starter early part of his career, but I think there's very little complaint about with Keaton Wynn. I think he's definitely somebody who can stabilize your fantasy rotation.
Yep, I like the Wynn call. My next guy is kind of unexciting. Bryce Elder has got a spot in the Braves rotation again, unfortunately, because Spencer Strider's elbow exploded. Elder in his first start back, 6 2/3 shutout innings in his season debut. Should stick in the rotation. 2.97 ERA in the first half last year, made the All-Star team. Second half, not so great. And he's a guy who is not going to miss a ton of bats. He's probably someone you would prefer to keep on your bench in a kind of scarier matchup, but he's going to have great wins potential on the Braves. He gets a lot of ground balls. Workload is not a concern. So it's definitely more of a floor play than a ceiling play, but I think Bryce Elder is definitely back on the fantasy radar, even in mixed leagues.
And because he's more of a floor, what, just a 2-3% we're thinking here?
Yeah, I don't think you need to go beyond that.
Yeah, I'm right there with you. I would not at all be excited to have Bryce Elder on my team, but he's probably going to be fine in most of his starts and going to give you a shot at a win in a lot of them, and that's good enough in a lot of places. I'm going to go to Reed Garrett as our first reliever of the day, ahead of some guys who have more of a shot of being closers, because I'm a little bit worried that those guys are going to go for bids that suggest they really are closers, and I think Reed Garrett isn't, because he's definitely not the closer. Edwin Diaz is the closer for the Mets. So why would I want Reed Garrett at all? And why am I including him here, right? This is the section where we're even talking about shallower leagues. Well, that's because every year there's a reliever who pops up out of basically nowhere and is so good that they are at least your worst pitcher in your fantasy lineup every week. If you're in any league where you're ever starting a starter who you really kind of wish you weren't, you probably could find a really good reliever who's going to get you excellent ratios and strikeouts. And Reed Garrett is that guy. Think like a Yennier Cano last year. Think like an Evan Phillips popping out of nowhere a few years ago. Reed Garrett did absolutely nothing prior to this season. 44 1/3 innings, a 7.11 ERA, a 15% strikeout rate. This year in 12 2/3, he's got a 0.71 ERA, and he struck out literally half of the batters he's faced. There's a great article called Allow Me to Convince You to Believe in Reed Garrett by Ben Clemens over at Fangraphs, which goes over his repertoire and how he does it. And interestingly, he's got just a sort of a kitchen sink approach, which you don't expect from a reliever. It's not necessarily just being overpowering, but it's about having a slider and a sweeper, and he added a splitter, and he's got multiple fastballs. It's all really working. He's doing all of the trendy things. And I think that you can create a reliever. It happens. Like I said, Yennier Cano last year, you just get these guys who pop up out of nowhere. This is enough of a sample size for me. Again, a 50% strikeout rate, even over 12 2/3. You can't really fake that. So I think Reed Garrett, he's got a spot in way more leagues than you might think, even though the only way he closes this year is if Edwin Diaz hits the injured list.
Yeah, I mean, usually with these relievers that pop up out of nowhere, it's they figure out this just one pitch that they've suddenly mastered, and that's takes them to the next level. But like you said, he's kind of got a kitchen sink approach. It's been interesting. We mentioned Reed Garrett in last week's podcast on the deeper league options, and I distinctly remember saying that he had zero shot at saves, which that's pretty much going to be the case. But then an hour after the podcast, he got a save.
Yeah.
It was like an extra innings game. It's flukish. It's just funny how that works. But I'm with you that if you're looking at the kind of the dregs of the waiver wire starting pitchers and you don't really like your options, you're probably better off going with someone like Reed Garrett. Hector Neris is someone who's probably going to get some saves. In fact, he already has three in each of his last three appearances. He's picked one up. Adbert Alzolay has gone to low leverage appearances for the time being during his struggles. I think Alzolay is probably going to eventually figure it out and have a shot to get that job back, but he also has an injury track record and not a very long track record of success as a major league reliever. You also have Craig Counsell managing the Cubs, who isn't necessarily beholden to traditional bullpen roles, although he has had some lockdown relievers during his time with the Brewers that made it pretty easy, turnkey-ish bullpen for him. But I think Hector Neris is certainly good enough to where he could just keep this job the rest of the season. He has had walk issues this season, but a bat misser with a proven track record. He's a guy who I was actually prioritizing over Alzolay. It was mostly because Alzolay, not necessarily that I had performance concerns. It was more of his past injury elbow issues. But I think Neris has some staying power on a Cubs team that looks like it could be pretty decent.
So the question here then is the price, which is what I alluded to with Reed Garrett, and then I forgot to give the price that I would go with Garrett. I think you can probably get Garrett for a 3-5%, and I don't think that I would go much more than that. And if I had to, I wouldn't want him because he's never going to be more than the last pitcher in my lineup. It's just that I think he is going to be the last pitcher in my lineup a ton of weeks. Hector Neris, you're going to probably have to pay closer prices to get him, do you think? And do you want to do that? That's my question.
Yeah, it probably just depends a lot on your situation. I mean, if you're someone who's paid up on Abner Uribe and are now looking for another closer, although maybe you feel a little burned about spending on Uribe and getting him as a closer for maybe another week. But yeah, I think if you want to be aggressive and make sure you get Neris, you're probably going to have to go, I mean, easily into the double digits, certainly. You know, we're going to talk about Mark Leiter Jr. later in the podcast too. I don't think it's out of the question that he could get some saves as well, but Neris certainly looks like the main option there for the time being. I think you're probably going to have to go 15 plus if you want to make sure you get him at least.
Yeah. I think he probably will look at what the closers are going for. And I think he's going to go for that price. And I just don't know with this Craig Counsell bullpen, is he really just going to pick a guy and stick with him for multiple months, let alone the whole year? I don't know. That's also why I didn't throw Trevor McGill on our outline today, partially because I think we've talked about him in like half of our Fab shows so far, given the way the Brewers bullpen has gone. McGill got a save again, so maybe he's back in front in that Brewers bullpen. And that might mean that people are bidding on him like a closer, but I'm not sure if he is the closer either, or if he's just the guy who got the most recent save. So I want him. If I picked him up earlier and failed to drop him, then cool, I'm happy. But if I have to bid double digits to get him, I don't think I'm doing that.
Yeah, this is why we should just ban closers and relievers, Eric. I mean,
yeah.
What's the point? It makes it too hard. Fantasy baseball is already hard enough.
True. I want to play in a league where I know all the stats in advance. Then it would be really easy. If we just play in a 2023 league, I would crush it.
There you go.
Moving back to actual relevant things, let's talk about some hitters. Heston Kjerstad may have just reached over the threshold in the daily pickups leagues. I think he's now on over 50% of rosters in places like Yahoo and CBS. But actually, if you're in a weekly pickups league, even a deep one, you'll be able to bid on Heston Kjerstad this weekend. I believe he's out there still in 90% of TGFBI leagues. He was only stashed in 10% of them. Kjerstad, he's going to have to fight for playing time in that crowded Orioles roster, but he's really good. They called him up for a reason. Big power. He was showing huge power in the minors, 10 homers in 21 games, strikeout rate 21.5%, and 1176 OPS. He was getting off to the best possible start over the first few weeks. There was no real way they could keep him down longer. Definitely some playing time concerns, as mentioned. There's just too many good players in Baltimore. But I think the upside here is high enough with Kjerstad that even if he's, you know, a power over a hit guy who may not end up hitting enough, and even if he could go right back down in a month or sooner, as we've seen with the Orioles, I think the upside is enough that you're going to have to go pretty high if you want Heston Kjerstad. I think he's a over 10% type hitter, and there aren't a ton of those on the hitter side.
Yeah, I would agree that it's probably going to take that much to get him. I think I would pass if it does ultimately take that much, just because I still am worried a bit about the playing time. I do think there is going to be some swing and miss there. And he's definitely, in a best case scenario, he's going to be a platoon. It would be the strong side platoon, but there are enough questions that I wouldn't overextend myself with the bid. And if you are outbid, I think that's might just be for the best. My next guy is Tyler Freeman. 3 home runs, 3 stolen bases, his first 22 games with the Guardians. His batted ball data has been very good this year. 50.8% hard hit rate. His fly ball rate and pull rate both way up this season. Batted second the previous 2 games. I think he got dropped a little lower today, but Thursday and Friday, I believe, he batted second in the Guardians lineup. Got quadruple eligibility on Yahoo. That is certainly a handy thing to have. Freeman, his career's been kind of strange. Like, the Guardians brought him up when he was really young, and they never really played him a whole lot. And his minor league track record has just been kind of so-so. He's always regarded as, you know, in his younger days, he's still young, but in his minor league days, as a top 100-ish prospect. The numbers haven't been great in the minors, but, you know, he's still very young. He's finally getting his opportunity. The batted ball data looks pretty good. He can run. He has shown he can hit for a little bit of power. I'm interested enough, especially with the quad eligibility, I would think I would go 7 for him.
Yeah, I think that could make some sense. He's a tricky sort of player as a prospect. Like you said, he was a top 100 type guy, but of the sort of shape that isn't the most exciting. Good hit tool, but nothing else really stands out. But if nothing stands out and you can play some spots higher on the defensive spectrum, he's mostly not been a shortstop in the majors, but he has played there, right? So if you can kind of do everything and have a good hit tool and can kind of play anywhere, that actually really does add up to a top 100 style prospect. And then it's just a matter of, well, does the game get to a place where there's actually something interesting here, or just totally solid and boring? He's still on that borderline, but yep, there was enough there, I think, again, since the time he was a prospect, that I'm willing to take a chance for sure. I will go to Willier Abreu for our next guy. We may have touched on him last week due to a listener comment. I think we didn't have him officially on our list, if I'm remembering right. He is pushing up towards 50% ownership in some of those shallower league sites, and I think that he should keep going. I am now becoming more and more convinced by Willier Abreu. He sat against a lefty yesterday, but has been batting cleanup the 4 games before then. And I think there's enough in Willier Abreu's profile that even if he didn't have the prime lineup spot, I think we're starting to see enough that he's a real player. The guys he reminds me of are like the Jack Suwinski, James Outman types, the outfielders, left-handed outfielders who are power over hit with a bit of speed some issues against lefties. Maybe they're just going to be platooned. That kind of player has a role in fantasy, especially if they don't end up being platooned, so you can actually use them every day. I think with Jack Swinski, for example, if the Pirates are facing one righty and two lefties this weekend, you got to take them out of your lineup. But Willier Abreu is playing more often right now due to some injuries in Boston and showing plenty. I wouldn't necessarily buy into his actual stats right now, specifically that .306 batting average comes with just a .233 expected batting average, because he's getting quite lucky in terms of BABIP. It's just under 400. It was just over 400 in his small sample last year. So I wouldn't be surprised if he ends up being a guy who runs a high BABIP because he makes quality contact. But I think what we're going to see is a guy who falls back into being a four category guy with a bad batting average. But those four categories, there's enough there that I think he has pretty universal appeal.
Yeah, and Alex Cora, you know, came out and said this week too that Sandin Rafaela is going to be the everyday shortstop. I mean, he had been in the lineup only at shortstop for like the past week, so we kind of knew that, but he came out and said it as well. So that's one fewer outfielder that he has to battle for at bats with. So yeah, I'm with you on Willier Abreu. Another outfielder that has piqued my interest, Trevor Larnach. You know, I was one of many, I think, that were in on Matt Wallner this spring. I was interested in his potential power output, but Wallner just didn't hit at all. And Larnach has pretty much just replaced him on the Twins. And so far gone 9-for-24 with two home runs, a couple doubles in his first eight games. Hitting the ball very, very hard. 52.6% hard hit rate, 15.8% barrel rate. Struggled with strikeouts a lot last year with the Twins, but he hit the ball hard then as well. Had a 49.6% hard hit rate, 13.3% barrel rate last year. He's not going to play against lefties probably at all, but against righties, and I think there might have been one lefty mixed in there, but his last six starts, he's not hit lower than fourth for the Twins. There's some pedigree there as well with Larnach. He's been a top 100-ish guy before. And there is some swing and miss issues, some platoon issues. So not a perfect player, but he's got some power. The batted ball data looks good. He's been in a favorable spot in the Twins lineup. So I think he's worthy of at least a $4 or $5 bid.
Yeah, the only hesitation there, I guess, would be, well, what if Wallner gets good in the minors again and they bring him back? They're kind of the same player, aren't they? They're left-handed corner sluggers who strike out way too much but might have enough power to make the whole thing work. And Larnach's been right on the border of whether or not it works before. So if you go four, I might go a little bit more like 2-3, but you could definitely make the case for why not get the guy who's playing now, especially with him making a little bit more contact through eight games. Get him and, you know, drop him for Wallner in a month or two if they make that swap again. The final priority guy here, I'm moving Joe Adell up into this section. I believe we talked about him as a cheap flyer last week, but I think that it might be time to give some more interest to Joe Adell. The guy is succeeding in exactly the way that we wanted to see in each of the last 5 years or something, right? The story on Joe Adell has been, wow, he does a lot of things, but man, he does not make contact at all. In two of his five seasons so far, he's had a strikeout rate above 40%, and once it was 37.5%. This year, it's just 23%. Should note that he was right at that mark back in 2021, so this isn't literally the first time he's done it, but that year, he wasn't hitting the ball very hard. This year, 52% hard hit rate and a 13% barrel rate. If you didn't look at the previous four lines of Adell's stat page, if you didn't know anything he'd done before this season, you'd look at what he'd done now and see a guy who is crushing the ball and whose underlying numbers say, yeah, this is a really good hitter. I don't think he's going to keep up anything close to this necessarily, but man, five steals and four caught stealings too, which is almost encouraging in his own way because it means that he's attempted nine steals. They're really letting him show off his athleticism. I think that you've got to take a shot on this guy because this is the player we wanted him to be for the last 5 years. I don't know for sure by any means that he's fully realized Joe Adell's potential, and we've got peak Joe Adell. He's here, the guy that you were waiting for years. He has arrived, but you know, this is what it would look like, right? If by the end of the year, it turns out that he had arrived, this is the sign. We would have known after April, right? So I'd be getting pretty into Joe Adell and would be willing to push 8% maybe even in some shallower leagues.
Oh yeah, I'm good going that high. And I should note that one of those caught stealings, I don't know if you saw this the other day, he was thrown out to end a game. I can't remember who they were playing, but the call at second base was he was out. They went to replay, and it sure looked like he was safe on replay. He was not happy once they did not overturn it. So something to keep in mind too. But I'm with you. We talked about it in the past, like just the desire and the willingness to show that you want to run. That's like more than half the battle with these guys. He obviously has the athletic ability to steal bases. So the desire and the getting on base enough to do it is more than half the battle, I think. Speaking of stealing bases, I want to throw this on there too. A couple of people have asked about Jacob Young. I considered him as well, adding him to the priority list, and a pretty limited player, but he's very good at that one thing he's going to provide for you. It's stolen bases. I think he still has not been caught at the major league level. And the Nationals were kind of toying with using Eddie Rosario in center field. They've gone away from that a little bit because Eddie Rosario has never been a center fielder and he's in his mid 30s. So I don't know why they were toying with it to begin with. Victor Robles is kind of on the mend. I think he just started baseball activities recently and they almost non-tendered him anyway. I don't think they're necessarily committed to him. I know he's a former top prospect, but I think that ship is pretty much sailed if Jacob Young shows that he's capable of continuing to get regular playing time. So I think he's definitely worth a bid if you're in need of steals because, like I said, limited player, but he's running like almost literally every time he gets on base. And like I said, is yet to get caught stealing. So I think he's worth at least a like 4 or 5 if you're looking for stolen bases.
Yeah, definitely team specific. He's already up to 8 steals after adding 2 steals today. Like you said, though, such a limited player. I mean, he's a singles hitter. He's hitting 302, 351, 358. So that 302
that just means
really
he has
good.
More bases to cover that he can steal,
true.
Eric.
True. So again, if you're in a situation where steals are what you need, absolutely go get Jacob Young. And certainly in deeper leagues, I think he was over the 50% threshold, so I didn't throw him on the budget buys. But if he's out there in your deeper league, go get him. I was watching a little bit of the Nationals game today, and they did a Jacob Young highlight montage. And the highlights, I believe, were the first one was he went from first to third on a single, and the next two were bunts. So that's the type of player we're talking about here. I wouldn't get like too excited, but he can run. And that has use in our game, to be sure. We will move on to our budget pitchers and hitters after this ad from Vivid Seats. Finally, baseball is back. This MLB season, knock it out of the park with Vivid Seats and score great tickets to the biggest games of the year. Every fastball, every home run, and every eye-popping play of your favorite team, live and in person. Plus, with Vivid Seats rewards, you can earn rewards with every single purchase. Just buy 10 tickets, then cash in your credit toward your free 11th ticket. Talk about an easy win. And here's a pro reward tip. When buying tickets for your whole group, split the bill and make progress toward your free 11th ticket even faster. From behind the dugout to the upper deck, Vivid Seats has great tickets for all the 2024 games that matter to you. Just visit vividseats.com or download the app today. Vivid Seats. Experience it live. See vividseats.com/rewards for terms and conditions. I bought some tickets with Vivid Seats the other day. I went to a Cubs game, was sitting next to a pair of French tourists, and got to explain to them why everyone was booing Jose Altuve. So that was a little bit of fun. Didn't get too much into explaining the whole rules of baseball. They were aware that something happened when a pitcher throws 4 balls, but the point at which they asked me about it was right after a pitcher got removed from the game after walking somebody. And they were like, ah, okay, so he has to leave because he threw four bad pitches. I was like, almost. You almost got that one. But anyway, we'll chalk that one up to Vivid Seats somehow.
It makes you feel like maybe you're taking your baseball knowledge for granted when you have to explain that kind of stuff to people.
Yeah, true. I did not get into giving them any fantasy advice, but you know, maybe if I see them next year, they'll be on that level. Let's get back to the fab buys of the week, and we are moving from the priority ads to the budget pitchers and hitters. And as we said, the last few weeks, pretty much all these guys, we were going 1% or 2%, so assume that for all of them unless we say otherwise. Ryan, I see that you have put your namesake down as the first guy in this category.
I have. Can somebody free Ryan Feltner, please, from the Rockies? Any somewhat interesting pitcher, please get him out of that thin Denver air. Start against the Rays earlier this month, 10 strikeouts, just two hits allowed, one run over six innings for Ryan Feltner. Also had an outing against the Phillies where he had 22 swinging strikes. That's, I believe, one off the league lead for the season. Got 30 strikeouts and 25 and a third innings. The overall numbers, as you might suspect from a Coors pitcher, not great. He's actually been better, though, at Coors than on the road. I don't think that's going to continue, and that's part of the reason why I'm recommending him, because he has two road starts next week against the Marlins and against the Pirates. So if ever there were a week to stream Ryan Feltner, I think this is the week. I can understand why you might be apprehensive, but I do think there's some strikeout upside there, particularly against the Marlins. They're just not a very good team right now. I think Ryan Feltner has some ability, and with those two matchups, he makes for a viable streamer for sure.
Yeah, I definitely think Ryan Feltner on the road. I'm interested. My first budget pitcher here, Mitchell Parker. I just made his third start of the year, which is also the third start of his career today against the Marlins, and it went quite well again. So looking at his updated stats through three starts, 169 ERA, 0.94 whip, 14 strikeouts against two walks in 16 innings. Those were the first two walks for Parker. So I guess his numbers looked even more impressive heading into this start. It was a 28% strikeout rate against a 0% walk rate in two outings. I wouldn't get ahead of ourselves with Parker because he was not by any means a big prospect. But given what he's shown so far, given that control, again, just two walks through three starts, I'm intrigued enough to see where this goes. Plenty of ability to carve out a permanent rotation spot in Washington, I would say. It shouldn't be too hard. If you look good on that team in any role, you're going to keep playing that role, I would imagine. The only downside here with Parker, his next starts look like they may not be great. Next week, probably going to be at Texas. Week after that, lines up to face Baltimore. After that, though, at the White Sox. And again, it all gets pretty tenuous when we're talking a few weeks out. So a little bit worried that you might pick him up and not be able to use him, but he should be able to stick in the rotation beyond just those next two shaky starts, I would think, given that it's Washington. So I want to see where this goes. I'd like to add Mitchell Parker on a speculative cheap ad and see where this takes us.
Yeah, I'm going to go to the relief ranks now with my next guy, and a non-closer at that. We mentioned before, Reed Garrett, those guys can have value too. Lucas Ersig, understandably Mason Miller is getting all the attention in the A's bullpen because he's ridiculous, but Lucas Ersig has been awfully good himself. Former position player, has really nasty stuff, 169 ERA, 12-6 strikeout to walk rate, 10 and two-thirds innings so far. His velocity ranks in the 99th percentile. He gets whiffs with four different pitches. He also has a 48% ground ball rate. Average exit velocity ranks in the 91st percentile. So when they do make contact, they're making weak contact typically. You know, again, with Miller, I mean, we're talking about the A's. Are the A's going to trade Mason Miller? Because I think that would probably make sense to do it now. He is pitching with a partial UCL tear. At least he had it last year. I don't know if those things, do they technically, can they heal over time? I guess they can. Or maybe it's just doesn't get worse.
You see the fantasy players saying, well, he didn't get surgery, so it's only going to get worse. And that makes sense to me, but I'm not a doctor. And why would the doctors ever recommend the rest and recovery treatment if it has a 0% success rate? So I don't totally know how to parse that.
Yeah, but, you know, if he is healthy at the trade deadline, I feel like we're going to see his name brought up. Obviously, the A's are in a unique situation, and they're going to be almost surely continuing to tank for the next couple of years. And a lockdown reliever is going to have a ton of value, especially a lockdown reliever with multiple years of control. So I think he could fetch quite a return. And Urson could be the guy to step into the closer role for the A's. You're still a closer for the A's, but I mean, Mason Miller has what, 6-7 saves already. Ursig's not perfect. He walks a lot of guys, but as I mentioned, this is a lot of bats and typically does get weak contact when they do make contact. So I think he could have some value, even if he is not saving games, particularly in deeper leagues.
Yeah, it would have to be a pretty deep league to want to hold on to him until he takes that closer job. But certainly in leagues where you can afford to have a, you know, a setup man, I think he's right up there, because Miller could just get hurt, or like you said, he could get traded. Normally you would think that, well, a team's not going to trade, you know, the one good thing they have going for him. What would the fans think? But man, if the A's, you know, let their team be led by what the fans think, I'm pretty sure that franchise would be on a different path right now. So I think a Miller trade is more possible than it would be if he pitched for any other team, unfortunately. My next guy on the list here is Bailey Falter. I'm not about to tell you that I think Bailey Falter is really good and is the next big thing. I'm not going to do that. The main reason I'm putting Bailey Falter on here is that he tentatively lines up for a 2-start week at Oakland and then home versus Colorado, which is that literally the best possible 2-start week? I think it might be. He may not end up getting that Colorado start if, say, a certain Paul Skeens gets inserted into the rotation instead of taking someone's job.
Are you breaking news right now, Eric? Are you breaking news?
No, I don't think so.
No,
is there something I missed? Okay. Well, you know, it could happen. Theoretically, we could get that any day now. But as of right now, Bailey Falter lines up for the league's best possible 2-start week. And Bailey Falter is not bad. That's all I'm willing to say for him. He was a 5th/6th starter type for the Phillies at the start of his career. Certainly like him better as a 5th starter in Pittsburgh with a much better pitcher's park there than as a 6th starter in Philly. The main strength for Falter is that he has good command. His whole career, just a 5% walk rate. That's kind of it. Just a 20% strikeout rate isn't so far from league average. It's been down at 17% this year. So really not excited about Bailey Falter, but he is not bad. Shows good command and should have, again, the literal best possible 2-start week this week. So I think in deep leagues, again, you hope that Paul Skeens doesn't come up if you want to bid on Bailey Falter. And who wants to be that guy who's betting against Paul Skeens? But I'm too intrigued by this. And hey, you know what? Even if he doesn't get the 2-start week, you're getting 1 start at the A's and you're getting a guy who is probably okay in a great park. So I don't think Bailey Falter is too bad for the one of the last final starters on your roster, especially this week.
I think we just set the record for the most lukewarm endorsement in the history of the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast.
I kept talking and realized that I kept saying the same thing.
Hey, I recommended Ryan Feltner purely because of the streaming possibility. So
yeah,
nothing wrong with doing that. I think he had, you know, Falter had one bad start, first start of the season, and then he's been like a sub-2 ERA since then. So doesn't miss bats, but as you said, those two matchups are as good as they come. Another reliever for me, kind of teased it a little bit earlier, Mark Leiter Jr. Saves are possible with him. Don't know that Craig Counsell is necessarily going to stick purely with Hector Neris. Leiter has 7 saves over the last 2 seasons with the Cubs. So far in 2024, he's yet to give up an earned run, 13-5. strikeout to walk rate in 12 and a third innings. He's got a 27.1% strikeout rate as a Cub. His splitter has become one of the best swing and miss pitches in baseball, really. I mean, you look at his velo on his fastball or his sinker, it's like 91. But he's got one really, really good pitch, and that's his splitter. He's got a 63.3% whiff rate so far in 2024. He's at 48.2% last season. So sometimes, you know, we mentioned before with Reed Garrett's kind of an atypical that he throws so many different pitches, and that's how he's experienced a breakout. But Mark Leiter's kind of experienced a late career breakout with one really, really good pitch. So that could be enough to pick up some saves in a somewhat unsettled bullpen.
Yeah, a sneaky thing about Leiter, he's been a lefty specialist. At least that's how he's been used. Over two-thirds of his innings so far this year were against lefties. And last year, 45 innings against lefties versus 19 against righties. And the Cubs, they only have one lefty in the bullpen right now, and that's Luke Little, a rookie who isn't necessarily going to be getting the high leverage opportunities. So if this does become a true committee, I think you expect Leiter to get the saves when it's a run of lefties in the ninth inning, even though he is a right-handed pitcher. Let's move over to our budget hitters, starting with another Cub, Pete Crow Armstrong. He has recently gotten the call. He'll get some opportunities in center field with Cody Bellinger out of action while he's injured for another few weeks here. Pete Crow Armstrong, very much a defense-first prospect, and that's why he's only in the budget buys section. He is quite a big prospect. You'll see him top 25, I think, on real-world prospect sources. But the type of player that he'll often get compared to is somebody like a Kevin Kiermaier, somebody who's going to have a very long, productive career in the big leagues as, you know, a 2-3 win player, maybe more in his best seasons. But it's defensive value over everything else. And now that does mean, for fantasy purposes, should help keep him in the lineup at peak, right? Peak Crow Armstrong in a couple years might be, you know, 10% worse than league average at the plate, but in the lineup every day. This year, is he going to be in the lineup every day? I don't know. And is he going to stick around too long if Cody Bellinger comes back? I don't know. So I keep expectations pretty tempered here because the bat, I mean, in 19 games at AAA, it was terrible, 633 OPS. He's picked it up recently. I think his last couple games, he's had some hits, had his first big league hit, which was a homer after struggling to 13 hitless games last year. So overall, I'm not at all convinced that Pete Crow Armstrong's bat is there yet, but he's going to get some chances with the Cubs. So if I'm in a deep league and want an outfielder who's going to play the next few weeks and, hey, who might do something if he turns a corner here as a rookie, take a shot at Pete Crow Armstrong.
Yeah, and I think he was injured at the beginning of the year at AAA too. So he was hit a little better more recently, and still some hope, I think, down the road. He's still very young that bat could at least be league average-ish. Don't necessarily think we can count on that happening now, but as you mentioned, his glove should keep him in the lineup at least while Cody Bellinger is injured. I'm going to make Uncle Ted happy here because my next guy is, in fact, Hunter Goodman. Three-run home run for Hunter Goodman and a comeback win over the Padres on Thursday. His time at AAA Albuquerque, 1042 OPS and 7 home runs, hit 34 home runs in the minors in 2023, hit 36 there in 2022. I mean, there's a path to playing time here if he hits. Right field is theoretically open for the Rockies, and they've played Charlie Blackmon a good amount there, but they could very easily just stick him in the DH spot. It's probably where he belongs anyway. And, you know, maybe hopefully that the Nolan Jones back issue, he did return to the lineup today, I believe. But if that gets worse, that could open up additional potential for at bats. Hunter Goodman is interesting, and obviously in a great park for any somewhat interesting bat. So I think certainly in deeper leagues, he's a viable option. And I should mention, by the way, They're in Mexico City, as we talked about earlier. So if you can do a quick pickup for these two games for Hunter Goodman, go ahead and do that.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely interested in Hunter Goodman playing time and a great park. Who knows about his talent in and of itself? Who knows how interested I'd be elsewhere, but got to be interested in any Rocky who looks at least decent. And that's him. My next guy here, Matt Mervis. Can't say I'm too excited here, but he was another Cub who was called up recently related to Garrett Cooper, now being in Boston, who we talked about earlier. Mervis, he might just be a quad A first baseman. It's a little bit too early to conclude that, but there's a very real chance that we're concluding that in 2 months. But he might not be. And so if you need a corner guy, one who's playing right now, be a little bit interested in Matt Mervis. At the AAA level in 2022, a 977 OPS, and then a 932 OPS, and this year a 1009 OPS. So absolutely nothing left to show there, but he's 26, so that's kind of what you'd think. At the majors last year in 99 plate appearances, a 531 OPS, and he's gotten off to a pretty poor start through four games here, which means you're probably not going to have to bid that much. Definitely not getting myself too excited about Matt Mervis. But remember, prior to last season, there was a pretty good amount of Matt Mervis hype. And if that wasn't completely off base, if we get Mervis hitting much more like a league average hitter, he's got some playing time right now. Sure, let's take a shot at Matt Mervis.
Yeah, it seems like a long time ago, doesn't it, that last spring it kept to remind people how much buzz there was with Matt Mervis, because it was palpable. There's a lot of – there's a lot of swing and miss in that game, but he does have a lot of power. So if he makes enough contact and gets regular at bats, he definitely becomes interesting. A guy who is going to get regular at bats, at least for the next couple of weeks, it looks like, is Dylan Moore with the Mariners. JP Crawford is out with the oblique injury. Looks like it's going to be longer than a minimum stay on the injured list. He's going to be the regular shortstop. Five stolen bases in a limited role so far in 2024. He had 20-plus steals both in 2021 and 2022 as a part-timer. Tons of strikeouts with Dylan Moore. If he hits over 200 while you have him, you should probably chalk that up to a win. But he does hit the ball hard. He can run into some home runs. He draws some walks too. And he's triple eligible. And he basically anytime he gets on base, he runs. So very, very flawed player. But we're talking about deep leagues here, so – triple eligible, can steal some bases and run into the occasional home run. So in a deep league, I think he's certainly viable.
Yeah, Dylan Moore is one of those guys who, if you like looking at per 600 projections, if you take a guy's everybody's projections and scale them to the same amount of playing time, usually 600 plate appearances, he almost always pops. And once or twice a couple years ago, that led me to get a little bit more excited about him than I should. He's a bench player. His batting average is always, his ability to make contact is too poor. He's just a classic bench player who actually has a bit of pop and a lot of speed. I looked at his projections right now and just prorated them to 600 plate appearances. And you're talking about a guy who would be a 2040 type with a 210 batting average if you're lucky. And he's not going to give you 20 homers and 40 steals because he's not going to stay in the starting role for that long. But if he's playing every day over the next 2 weeks, that's 2 weeks worth of a 2040 player. That's actually quite good, even though Dylan Moore has never and will never be an everyday player. My next hitter here, Miguel Sano. Did not expect to be mentioning his name. Frankly, even after we saw that he had made the Angels, I don't believe we've even thought about putting him on here earlier, but it's 8 or 9 games in a row now where he's the cleanup man in every game. Gotta love that. And while his statistical profile is flawed, it's flawed in a normal Miguel Sano way, not in a this is not a player who has any hope of being in the majors ever again kind of way, which is who I thought Miguel Sano was. Now he's striking out 38% of the time. Like, I don't normally recommend.
So it's improved, is what you're saying.
Yes, exactly. That's the thing. Technically, it's a tiny bit worse than his career mark, but that's 36.5, right? This is normal Miguel Sano. He's paired a complete inability to make contact with a ton of walks at 11.3%. That's right in line with his career average. and he's hitting the ball really hard, a 63% hard hit rate this year and an 11% barrel rate. Oddly enough, he's pounding the ball into the ground so far. His fly ball rate's way down, and that's why there's only one home run. So I'm not excited about Miguel Sano. I don't think he's, you know, fully back to peak Miguel Sano, and even that guy was flawed. But I think Miguel Sano is totally back to being a surprisingly viable major leaguer. I don't know if he's going to be healthy that long, but and also I think he can't even plug him in anywhere but utility, which is part of the reason why he's still likely to be out there. But if you need a bat, I think you can get Miguel Sano.
Yeah, only utility for now, but surprisingly they've been using him at third base a good amount since Anthony Rendon got hurt. And by the way, came out that Rendon has a tear in his hamstring. So, you know, that's going to would keep any player out for a long time. And for Anthony Rendon, it'll probably you can add another month or two to that IL stint. I mean, Miguel Sano is – look, he could be DFA'd in a couple weeks. We don't know. But while he's getting regular playing time, he – probably he's going to hit some home runs. As you mentioned, he just needs to get the ball in the air a little bit more.
8 games at third. I just looked it up. So that means that if your league uses 5 game minimum, he's already eligible. And if he uses 10, he'll be eligible this week. So this is the week to go get him. I threw Addison Barger on here just as one of our last couple names. He did get the call in Toronto and looks like he might be playing against righties. Any real interest in Addison Barger? He's not the biggest prospect, more of a fringy guy, but he might have enough to carve out a role in Toronto. The Blue Jays could certainly use somebody taking a step forward in the back half of that lineup. Doesn't really look nearly as strong as it was supposed to be. Good numbers in AAA, a 1021 OPS in 19 games, although he had a below average line there last year. I don't see a ton with Barger, but is there enough here?
In deep league, sure, I think so. They put him in left field. I believe he said that was literally the first time he'd ever played left field. I don't think he played the outfield, at least not regularly, until this year. He'd mostly been an infielder, but seems like they're going to move him to the outfield full-time now. But there is an opening there in left with Dalton Varsho sliding over to center with Kiermaier hurt. So against righties, you know, Davis Schneider's playing a good amount in left field, but that could be more of a short side platoon for him. So, you know, a deep league, I think Barger's viable.
Yeah, I'm more interested in Davis Schneider just on talent, but if the playing time isn't there, it's hard to take a shot on him. That was all the names that I had on the list, but I just wanted to add a couple from the comments here. We got a hot take saying Blake Perkins, best center fielder in baseball. Probably not true, but
defensively, he's up there.
Yeah, exactly. And he's been playing, I think, nearly every day last couple weeks, probably related to Christian Yelich not being an option in that Brewers outfield. Perkins, I believe, might be a little bit over the 50% threshold in some of those deeper leagues.
Yeah.
But do you think he should be owned in all of the deeper leagues and maybe some shallower ones?
Deep leagues, definitely. I mean, he's never was really a super highly regarded prospect. The numbers in the minors were just so-so, but he's, you know, a switch hitter who's playing every day. He's been hitting, kind of inching up higher in the Brewers lineup as well. And as we've mentioned, that glove will give him a little leash too. And it doesn't seem like Christian Yelich is terribly close to returning. So he could be getting everyday playing time for a good amount.
Yeah, we are talking about somebody who didn't debut until age 26 last year and was below average and pretty ordinary last season. So wouldn't get too excited, but he's playing and he looked pretty decent. And then one final guy from the comments. We've got Matt here saying, someone dropped James Wood in one of my leagues. How much fab should I drop on him tomorrow? James Wood, pretty good time to stash him in places where a stash makes sense, I would think. Through 100 plate appearances at the AAA level, the most significant thing to me is that he's only striking out 23% of the time, and James Wood is someone who has regularly run very problematic strikeout rates in the minors, the type that make you wonder whether or not this is actually going to work, despite all his other skills. Time to jump in on James Wood, and maybe a pretty decent bid if you're in a league where people are competing for stashes, I would think.
Yeah, I mean, if you want to get aggressive for him, I think you're gonna have to bid pretty high if you want to get him. The Nationals, I don't know when we're gonna see him. They seem hesitant to bring him up anytime soon, but it's always tough to read into those types of comments. You never know, you know, what could he could have a super hot week or two, and they decided that he's ready. So, I mean, the ceiling with James Wood is absolutely through the roof. And as you mentioned, he's starting to make a lot more contact. So I don't know what number you think you'll have to go to lock him up.
It's so tough because the stashing is so different between various leagues. There's some leagues where you can go the minimum because people don't even notice. And there's some leagues where everybody's stashing guys all the time. We'll assume that it's maybe one of those leagues, in which case find whatever the highest number of the stashes were previously and probably go a tiny bit higher than that. And he's going to be one of the most exciting guys when he does eventually arrive. And so if you're trying to stash him now and you know there's competition for stashes, pay up is would be my advice there. That's going to do it for today's show. Thank you, listeners. Thank you to everybody who left comments. Thank you, Ryan. And we will be back here next week with another set of pickups. And tomorrow I'll be with Chris Towers talking about how much the first month has adjusted what we wish we did back in draft season. Thanks, everybody. Back tomorrow on the RotoWire Fantasy Baseball Podcast brought to you by PrizePicks.